Jamie paused at the cemetery at the edge of the still-growing town of McAllister. He sat in his saddle for a moment, looking at the headstones, his mind filled with memories. The early settlers were going faster now as the years piled up behind them. Sam and Sarah Montgomery lay side by side in the cemetery. Both had lived into their 80s and had died within weeks of each other. But they had left behind kids and grandkids to proudly carry on their name. Falcon had seen his father ride up, and he rode out to meet him.
Any trouble, Pa?
None to speak of. How's your Ma?
Fine. Misses you.
Any trouble?
Not the first sign of it.
Well, it's coming, and it'll be coming in large groups when it does.
After a long, hot bath and a shave, Jamie sat down to eat with Kate.
Is this Cord the girl's father, Jamie?
Yeah. And we both agreed there was nothing we could do or should do about the marriage, which probably already took place anyhow. Did you tell Ellen Kathleen about, well, you know.
No, I wanted to talk to you about that.
Why should we worry her? But on the other hand, if something were to happen, like, with babies... Oh, hell, Kate, you know what I mean.
I'm gonna have to give that some thought, Jamie. Did you have any trouble on the trail?
Yeah, three of Ellis's boys tried to raid my camp. Two didn't make it back out, and the third is out there somewhere pretty messed up.
Will more men be coming here?
I'm certain of it.
One thing about being married to you, Jamie Ian McAllister, I have never lacked for excitement in my life.
But it has been a good life, has it not, love?
I wouldn't trade it for anything, Jamie. Nothing in this world.
Ben Franklin Washington awakened to a terrible throbbing pain in his head. He lay still for a moment, trying to get his bearings. It didn't take him long to realize that he was in a ditch or a pond or lake, or he was lying in several inches of water. Slowly, very slowly, he raised his head and looked around him. There was not a lamplight in sight. He lay in darkness. He put out one hand and felt a rise in the earth. He pulled himself toward that rise until he was out of the water. The eastern sky was just starting to turn pink. Then panic struck him hard. His mind was a total blank. He didn't know his name, didn't know where he was, couldn't recall what had happened to him, nothing.
Calm down. Just calm down and relax. I've suffered some sort of accident, that's all. My memory will return.
Ben slept for a time until the warmth of the sun awakened him. With full consciousness, bits and pieces began returning to him.
I am a writer, a reporter. My name is Ben Franklin Washington. I am in Virginia, and somebody tried to kill me.
Ben pulled himself to a sitting position. Only then was Ben aware of a pain in his left arm and chest. He looked down. A bullet hole penetrated his coat and shirt, the bullet having nicked the fleshy part of his inner arm and gouged a thin line in the side of his upper chest.
After I was struck, they brought me out here and shot me and left me for dead. That has to be it.
Ben smiled ruefully. Just another dead nigger found alongside the road. But who would do such a vile and evil thing? He immediately thought of his mother and uncle. He patted his pockets. His wallet was gone, of course, and all the change and keys. But Ben was no fool. He looked around him before removing his shoes. He had several $100 in paper money hidden under the inner lining of his shoes. He smoothed that out, then, using a thin rock, pried off one heel and removed several gold coins from the hollowed-out leather. He hammered the heel back on, then washed and dried each article of wet, muddy clothing carefully. Then he bathed his face and hands in creek water and dressed. His head hurt something awful, and he gingerly probed the back of his head. There was a knot about the size of a goose egg there, but he could detect nothing broken. He sat for a time, his thoughts busy.
Yes. All right. Let them think me dead. I have funds to return to Boston on the train. I'll confer with my editor, and then we'll see about upsetting some apple carts. I wanted to cause you no trouble, Mother. I just wanted to find out where I really came from. Perhaps see you. Tell you I hold no rancor toward you. Tell you I understand why you sought to pass for white and then quietly return to Boston and let sleeping dogs lie. But now, you will regret this, Mother. I promise you that.
Lou made it to Gold Town. He said nothing about his dead partners back on the trail. He had rifled their pockets, taken all their money, found the pistol Jamie had tossed into the brush, and fashioned himself a crutch of sorts, then hobbled on after shoving his dead partners over the side of the ridge. Varmints would soon erase all traces of them. Along the way, Lou treated his badly bitten arm with poultices and said nothing about it when he reached the settlement. As for his broken foot, he told the story that his horse bolted, spooked by a puma, and stepped on his foot. His horse had run off in a panic. He couldn't find it. It was a good enough story. It certainly happened to others, and no one questioned it. By the time he reached Gold Town, the bones in his foot were beginning to heal badly, and there was nothing that could be done for it, for there was no doctor in the boom town. Lou bought a horse and supplies, and then struck out to find his kin. He had a real score to settle with that damn Jamie Ian McAllister. There were still a few Indians left around McAllister's Valley, and they were all friends with Jamie. They were his eyes and his ears, and they didn't let him down.
White men come 4 days away.
How many, three horses?
The Indian pointed east, then held up both hands, fingers open. He opened and closed them 5 times, then shook his head and repeated the same thing twice more.
150 men.
Jamie pulled at his shirt and gestured to the east.
All same, blue, but not soldiers like we know. Hat different, not yellow legs, red leg.
Layfield's bunch.
That first group, second group smaller, dress all different. 2 days behind red legs. I go.
Jamie stood and watched three horses leave. 2 groups of men, both of them coming after him. Layfield and Ellis's kin, he felt certain. He couldn't let him strike the town. Too many innocent people would be killed. There were too many kids living here. With his return from Gold Town, Preacher and Smoke had pulled out. But even had they stayed, the odds would have been too great. Jamie squatted down and thought the situation over. Falcon and Marie were planning their wedding. Jamie wouldn't want to leave Marie a widow before the couple even got hitched. Jamie mounted up and rode back down to the village. No, he corrected himself. It was no longer a village. It was a town, with stores and a doctor and a church and everything else that made a community. It had to be preserved and preserved intact. This was his fight. Kate knew from the look on his face when he rode up that something was dreadfully wrong. She sent one of Morgan's children out the back door on the run to fetch his paw.
What is it, Jamie?
Pack me a bait of grub, Kate.
Those men... they're coming, aren't they, Jamie?
4 or 5 days out. There are too many of them, Kate. Far too many for us to handle here. I've got to slow them down. I've got to thin them out.
Jamie!
Listen to me, Kate. If they hit this town full strength, none of you will stand a chance. Layfield's a madman. He's insane with hate. He and his men will kill everything in sight. They'll kill children and women alike. They'll spare no one. This is my fight. Honey, there is no law near enough or strong enough to do us any good. Nearest army post is 150 miles away, and besides, this is a civilian matter. Okay, I don't intend to ride off and get killed. I'll be back, but I've got to cut the numbers down. While I'm doing that, this town can get ready to deal with the rest of them. I can't stop them all, but I can damn sure hurt them some.
Jamie noticed Jamie Ian standing in the open doorway, big and solid. Morgan and Falcon and Matthew stood on the porch.
Don't talk nonsense, Paul. You can't face this bunch alone. Me and the boys will get our gear together.
Stand still, boy. What you'll do is what I tell you to do. This town has got to be preserved. But more important than the town are the people who make it so. The kids, the women, the elderly who can't fight. I can buy you time to prepare for a fight, and I can cut down the odds considerably. Now start laying in food and ammunition and water. Fill the barrels, for there'll be fires to put out. Start fortifying the homes and businesses and lay out defensive positions for the men. And don't you argue with me about this. I won't stand still for it. Falcon, you go put the pack frame on Luke. He's tough as a mountain goat and doesn't spook. Your ma's gonna fix me some food. Don't stand there with your faces hanging out. Move!
The boys moved. They didn't like it, but they did as their father ordered. Jamie dressed in his old and worn but comfortable buckskins. He carefully cleaned and oiled his pistols. Two Colts around his waist, two on the saddle, left and right of the horn, and two more in his saddlebags. A dozen filled cylinders for the Colts. He loaded up two Henry rifles, one on the pack horse, one in his saddle boot.
You old goat. What you're doing is foolish. You're 60 years old, Jamie Ian McAllister.
You don't have to remind me of that, Hannah. I feel it on cold and rainy mornings. But when the sun shines, the age disappears like snow in the spring.
I've put together my things. I'm riding with you.
Now it's you who's foolish. You're an old woman. Go home and let your children and grandchildren care for you in your last years.
How much you think you know and how little you really do know, Jamie. I am just as much Shawnee as you, and I can still ride and I can still shoot and you can't stop me. I'm like an empty old bowl without Swede. I'll be behind you, and that is that.
Hannah left the barn just as Ellen Kathleen stepped in.
Go to the house and get my hat, Ellen Kathleen. I'll pick it up there.
Your colonel's hat, Pa?
No, the old brown one with the upturned brim.
The one with the feather in it, Pa?
You know which one I'm talking about, girl. Now do it.
As Ellen Kathleen left the barn, she saw Hannah step from her house wearing an old beaded buckskin dress and carrying a rifle. On the front porch of the McAllister house, Falcon saw her too.
Ma, you gotta see this. Something mighty queer's going on.
Kate walked to the door and looked out.
Leave her be, boys. She's doing what she wants to do and feels she has to do.
Well, what the hell is she doing?
Ellen Kathleen fetched her pa's old brown hat. Townspeople had gathered on both ends of the street, staring at Hannah. Kate stepped off the porch and went to her. The two women embraced, and Kate returned to stand in front of her house. Hannah's kids and grandkids stood silently on the porch of their mother's house. When Jamie came out of the barn, riding Lightning and leading the pack horse, Hannah lifted her rifle into the air. Hannah swung into her saddle with a grace that belied her age. She rode out to the edge of town, sat her horse, and waited. There was a strange smile on the woman's face as she looked toward the graveyard where Swede was resting. Jamie reached down and lifted Kate off the ground, kissing her soundly.
I'll be back.
You better. If you don't, I'll never forgive you.
This ain't right, Pa. Hannah's got kin and friends here. She can't just ride off to die. She ain't an Indian.
That's where you're dead wrong, boy. We both have as much Indian in us as we do white.
Jamie nodded at his family, plopped his old hat on his head, and rode off.
I don't reckon I'll ever understand, Pa.
Don't have to. She's getting the town ready for a fight. Right now.
Jamie rode off toward the east with Hannah right beside him. The horse she rode was old, and Hannah was comfortable with the animal. Jamie knew why she had chose that horse. Horse and rider would die together. Jamie would bury them Indian fashion where they fell, with the horse's tail tied to the tall burial platform and the body of the animal under the platform, if he was alive to do it. Hannah was in her 70s. She could still ride like the wind. Jamie would occasionally glance at her, and their eyes would meet, a silent understanding passing between them.
I feel the years lifting off me, flying away like eagles.
Me too, Jamie.
Are you weary of this life, Hannah?
Yes. I've birthed my children, and I've seen them grow into fine men and women. And I've loved my man with all my heart. And I wish to be with him again. Those who don't understand the Indian way wouldn't understand that, would they?
Probably not. Most of them, anyway.
Do you ever think of the life after this one?
I didn't used to, but I do now. I know a good spot up ahead. We'll camp there.
Cord Woodson had won a sizable pot from some miners and was now sipping whiskey and playing solitaire when a dusty traveler walked into the saloon and bellied up to the long bar.
Whiskey, beer chaser. There you are.
There's gonna be some big doings down to that old boomtown south of here. Some tin soldier named Aaron Layfield has got him a colonel's commission from the U.S. government to take care of the Indian problem here in Colorado. Before he does that, he's gonna clean Jamie McAllister's clock, or so he says. Seems as though Jamie has some old warrants out on him. Personal, I don't think they're worth the paper they're writ on, but until some high-up muggly-muck judge in Washington says they ain't no good, Jamie's got him a fight on his hands. I'm fixing to ride down that way and get me a good seat up in the hills. I got field glasses. I intend to see what Jamie does up again a couple of hundred men.
A couple of hundred men? Did he say a couple of hundred men?
That's right. But that ain't all. There's another group of manhunters coming up behind the first bunch. Maybe a day or two behind them. I'm telling you, this year is shaping up to be the grandest fight since Bull Run. And I ain't about to miss it. I'm going to get my supplies and get gone. I want to find a good spot to eyeball this fracas.
Wait a minute. Just hold on. Where did you say this fight was going to be?
Well, I don't rightly know for sure. But the logical place, if you look at a map, will be that no-name town about 50 miles south of here. You know, where the vein played out after about 6 or 7 months.
Yeah, they just started calling that place Bell City. Is that the place?
That's the place.
But why there?
I don't know. That's where everyone I jaw with says it's going to take place. Don't ask me why. See you, boys!
Several men rushed right behind the traveler, scurrying about to get supplies. Cort sat for a moment, idly shuffling the cards. Then he smiled, tossed the deck on the table, and stood up.
You aren't leaving, are you, Mr. Woodson? Don't forget your card game at 4:00.
I won't be able to make that game, Clarence. I just remembered I have an appointment. Clarence, should I not return, you can have all my clothing and other personal items.
Say what?
We're about the same size, so they should fit you well.
Why? Thank you kindly, sir, but why would you not return, Mr. Woodson?
Oh, call it a hunch. Just say I played out my hand. Yes, that's a good one.
Preacher and Smoke Jensen were just settling down the coffee, stew, and pan bread when a voice called out, hailing their camp.
I'm plum friendly, boys, and that stew do set my mouth to salivating. I got some canned peaches that go right well with that stew.
So come on, providing peaches is all you got in your hands, I'd sure hate to kill a man by mistake. Well, hell, I'd probably fret about that the rest of the night. Might keep me awake, and I'm a man who enjoys his sleep.
I'm Smoke. That's Preacher. Stew'll be ready in a few minutes. Sit.
Coffee's ready, providing you got a cup. I do have that. They call me Tin Pan. You boys hear the news?
What news?
You know where Bell City is.
I know where every rock is in Colorado. I know every spring, every creek, every tree, and every valley. Of course I know where that is. What about?
Gonna be a big shootout there, so I hear. There's about 600 or 700 men coming in from the east to kill Jamie Ian McAllister.
You don't say. Why would they want to be doing that?
Don't rightly know. Wayne was told to me it has something to do with the war. Some sort of a grudge.
Bell City, huh?
Yep. Folks is coming from all over to get them a good seat. But not me. I don't want to be nowheres around when that much lead starts flying.
Bell City isn't that far from here.
That's right, boy. It sure ain't.
Ain't you a part of McAllister?
I've been knowing the man for over 40 years. He's a real nice fella, Jamie.
When is this fight supposed to take place?
About 4 days from now, I heard.
The old mountain man and scout named Sparks, a distant relative of Captain Sparks from Texas, sat by his fire in the high up and mulled over the rumor he had just heard from some miners.
You say 1,000 or so men are all coming together down near Bell City to kill Jamie McAllister?
That's what I heard. Reckon this is the end for McAllister.
I wouldn't count on that.
There's some old woman riding with McAllister, too. White woman toting a rifle. She's supposed to be all dressed up like an Indian. Whole thing sounds like a made-up story to me.
Huddled by his tiny fire, Sparks decided he'd pull out at dawn and just take him a little ride down toward Bell City. There just might be some truth in what the miner said.
Get your possibles together, you little shrimp, and leave them goddamn Shakespeare books behind. We got some riding to do.
I'm quite comfortable here. Why should I leave such restful and untroubled surroundings to go wandering off with the disreputable likes of you?
Because we've been wandering off together for nearabouts goddamn 40 years, you hard-headed field mouse.
Something is terribly wrong, Lobo. What is it?
I heard thousands of men are coming after Jamie McAllister.
Thousands of men coming after Jamie?
That's what I heard.
I shall be but a moment, you prehistoric throwback. During the interim, you may saddle my mount for me.
Is there anything else you'd like me to do for you, you little turd?
Would you consider bathing?
I took a bath last month.
It was just a thought, a fleeting hope. Forget it. Stay downwind.
An old Nez Perce warrior called Nightstalker had heard the rumors about the men coming to kill Jamie McAllister and had pointed his horse's head toward the old, now deserted town of Bell City. A good friend was a friend forever, and Jamie McAllister was a good friend. The Nez Perce had long called Jamie Brother of the Wolf. A few miles to the south, an aging Cheyenne war chief called Darkhand had also heard the news and was traveling toward the old town. Darkhand was dying, and he knew it. His belly was on fire, and there was something growing there that wasn't supposed to be. This would be a fine way to end his days and travel the starry path to his other life. He'd die with much glory, and besides, he'd be helping an old friend. Darkhand smiled. Life was good. He just hoped he could get there before the pain in his belly grew intolerable. He patted his horse's neck.
Carry me there, old friend. We have a better life waiting for us.
Jamie and Hannah topped the rise and reined up, looking down at the deserted town that lay below them in a narrow valley. There was one way in and one way out, the road running right through the town.
What an interesting place to have a fight. A couple people with rifles at either end of the town could hold off an army, allowing only a few men at a time to enter. But there's only two of us.
For now. Come on, we're a couple of days ahead of Layfield, and at least 3 days ahead of those idiots behind him. Yeah!
Late that afternoon, Jamie had killed a deer and Hannah was cooking venison steaks in a deserted bar. Jamie heard the horses approaching and looked out what remained of a window.
I'll be damned.
You know the rider?
Yeah, put another stake on. Why, Mr. Woodson, what a surprise seeing you here.
A man never knows where his wanderings will take him, Colonel McAllister.
Make yourself comfortable. Supper will be ready in a few minutes. Let me introduce you to Hannah.
Cord laid his saddlebags, rifle, and blanket roll on the floor and took off his hat.
Miss Hannah?
Mr. Woodson, how good of you to join us. I'll have something to eat shortly. The coffee's ready.
Cord took a tin cup from his saddlebags and poured it 3/4 full of strong coffee, and then added a touch of whiskey.
For flavor.
Seen anybody else on the trail?
Two riders coming in from the northeast. They should be here in about half an hour.
Good thing I killed that deer. Place might be filling up with wandering men.
That's a very good possibility. In spite of the vastness of the area and the sparseness of population, news has a way of traveling quite quickly.
Yeah, so it does. Your pack horse is heavily loaded, Cord.
Yes, 2 small kegs of blasting powder I bought from some miners. You never know when you might want to blow something up.
How true.
Hannah cut off 2 more venison steaks, and Jamie went outside to see the Cord's horses.
Miss Hannah, I know little of Indian ways. Why do you have that single line painted on your forehead?
It means I'm ready to die.
I see. Well.
Are you?
Quite. What is it the Indians say? It is a good day to die, right?
If the cause is a worthy one.
Cord sat down and began cleaning, first his pistols, then his rifle. Then he laid out a dozen boxes of ammunition and began filling cartridge belts. Jamie returned, carrying a keg of blasting powder under each arm. He stayed in the open doorway, well away from the flames and the old stove.
Our store leads away from this building. Tomorrow we'll start constructing some bombs. Oh, I found some company outside, just rode in. Go on in, boys.
Jamie stepped aside to allow the two men standing behind him to enter.
Let's get this fracas over with, Jamie McAllister. Me and Smoke got business to attend to.
We'll wrap this up as quickly as possible, I assure you. Grub's on.
Good, I sure be hungry around my mouth.
I'll see to your horses.
Kind of you, Jamie.
20 minutes later, Sparks rode in.
Ain't it surprising who you meet on the trail? I thought I had this country all to my lonesome.
Well, I'll cut another steak.
You best cut several more. I just spotted Lobo and Audie headed this way.
Two more.
Night Stalker and Dark Hand stood in the rear door, both of them painted for war. Their approach had been so silent, not even the birds and squirrels had been alarmed.
Hoo-hoo-hoo! Place is getting mighty crowded. I thought you was dead, you old horse thief.
Not dead yet. Men gather on the slopes, have whiskey and barrels of beer. They come to watch, I think. Some women whip them.
Yeah, we ought to charge admission. Give me another one of them steaks, Hannah. You do have a way with venison.
How many men are we up again, Jamie?
Too damn many.
In the Boston newspaper office where Ben Washington worked, he had just finished recounting his near-death experience to the associate editor. With him was Richard Leander, editor of the paper.
An incredible story, Ben. What an evil woman. You should start legal action against them immediately.
No proof. The detective's death was ruled accidental, and I don't know who hit me, kidnapped me, shot me, and left me for dead. Whatever we write in the paper about the incident must be worded very carefully. We don't want to let ourselves open for a libel suit.
I have two men who should be at Gold Town now. They are to interview this Cord Woodson. I dispatched them immediately after Ben's return. One is an attorney, and the other a federal marshal. They are both experienced fighting men and quite capable of taking care of themselves. We'll do nothing about this until I hear from them. When they reach the nearest telegraph lines, on their return, they are to wire me.
Where is that, Mr. Leander?
Somewhere in Kansas, I think. But the wires may have been pushed farther west by now. I just don't know. The nation is pushing westward at near breakneck speed. You are aware, Ben, that once exposed, your mother could be ruined?
Not her. She has money scattered all over the country. So does her brother. We might disgrace her, but we'll never ruin her financially. She's far too smart for that. Sir, there are others to be considered as well. Paige Woodville knows nothing of her background. The same goes for Ross's children. I don't have the right to ruin their lives. This is such a sad affair, touching so many people. There must be a way we can handle it discreetly.
Back in Bell City, Night Stalker pointed to the crudely drawn map.
Mick Rock slides here. Block Road. Then men must come in on foot to attack town. When big group is in pass, we use blasting powder to bring down walls of canyon on both sides. Kill plenty, I bet.
That's mighty good planning, Night Stalker.
It is a very good plan, Jamie.
Let's get busy.
The two men Leander had sent to Gold Town had arrived, heard the news about the upcoming fight, and were now only a few miles away from Bell City.
9 men and 1 woman at the most against 400 or 500 armed men, they won't stand a chance.
Don't bet on that, Marshal. But what we don't want is to get caught up in this fight. We'll try to see Cord Woodson before the action starts, get his statement, if any, and get the hell out of there.
I don't want to get trapped in that town.
Me either.
You failed! Ben Franklin Washington is still alive!
That's impossible.
But true. My detectives say he returned to Boston and has had several meetings with police, attorneys, and federal people. A big wind is gathering, brother dear. Our house of cards is coming down.
For once, I'm at a loss for words, eh?
I'm not. I began preparing for this the day after I married Court. How much cash could you get together in, well, say a week?
quite a tidy sum, sister.
Enough to live comfortably on for the rest of your life? Be sure now.
Oh, yes. I've already seen to my children's future. Yes, I'll have quite a sum.
Get it together and do it quickly. Return here when you've done it. Then we'll make our move.
After Ross had left, two men stepped out of a room off to one side of Ann's office.
Follow him discreetly. Be here when he returns with the money.
And then?
Just be sure you get here a few minutes before he does.
Report, Scout.
McAllister's in that old deserted town about 10 miles from here, Colonel Layfield. Him and about 8 or 10 other people. And one of them is an engine woman. Also, the pass is blocked.
Over, around, or through, we'll overcome a blocked pass. The woman is probably that wife of his. Good work. We'll hit them just after dawn. Captain Miller, see that the men are well fed and get a good night's sleep. Tomorrow we finish McAllister once and for all.
Yes, sir.
Jamie and Kate's second set of twins, Andrew and Rosanna, now lived in England with their spouses, Lisa and Alfred. Andrew and Rosanna were due to return to the States in about a month for the start of a sell-out tour that would begin in New York City and eventually end in San Francisco. James William Haywood and his bride, Paige, were winding up their honeymoon in England and planned to return to the States with the twins and their troupe. They knew nothing of the events that were rapidly coming to a head thousands of miles away. Events that could possibly alter their lives forever. Layfield sent 50 men into the pass as spearheaders, picking their way carefully through the mounds of rock. High above them, the fuses, the carefully placed packets of explosives were lighted. When the dust cleared, the pass was forever blocked from the east for anything other than foot travel, and even that was going to be rough. To attack from the west, Layfield and his men would have to travel north for a few days, then cut west, then traveled south to reach the west end of the pass. It was a long detour. Layfield had sense enough to realize that Jamie and those with him would be sniping and nipping at their heels the entire way. And he knew only too well how proficient a guerrilla fighter Jamie was. Layfield silently cursed Jamie McAllister and everyone who was with him. 8 or 9 old men and one damn old Indian whore holding back several hundred men. He decided to wait and go in after dark. But Layfield didn't count on the several hundred spectators being there. At night, numerous campfires dotted both sides of the pass leading to the dark and silent town. And nearly to a person, the spectators were on the side of those in the town. The fires really added little light to the blocked pass far below them, but Layfield worried about them. They were a distraction. Inside the town, the defenders had no illusions about their situation. They had enough powder for one, maybe two more carefully placed explosions. Then it would be bullets as Layfield's men made their way through the pass and blades when they closed. And enough would make it through. The men and Hannah didn't kid themselves about that. At the west end of the pass, with the besieged town in sight, the attorney from Boston and the federal marshal approached.
Why don't they just get out, Marshal? What they're doing is eventually committing suicide.
It's a holding action, I suspect, giving the people back in McAllister's Valley time to get ready, and also cutting down the numbers those people will have to face when Layfield finally does break through.
Are those warrants we were told about valid?
They're not worth the paper they're written on, but until a judge declares them worthless, there is nothing I can do about this travesty.
We have to talk to Woodville, if that is Court Woodville down there going by the name of Woodson.
Oh, it's Woodville, all right. Listen, I have a plan. See what you think about this.
Two men carrying white flags coming in from the west!
One of the men stopped in the center of the street, while the second man, his badge pinned to the lapel of his coat, rode up to the edge of the blocked pass.
Layfield, I'm Red Foster, Federal Marshal. I need to talk to one of the men in town. Hold your fire until I leave the area, and that is an order. Do you understand me?
Red Foster of the Illinois Cavalry?
That's right.
Take as much time as you need, Marshal.
Thank you, you pompous, arrogant, overbearing, loudmouthed jackass.
The attorney had already dismounted and taken Cord and Jamie off to a separate building. Marshal Foster soon joined him and laid it all out for Jamie and Cord.
That's the story, Mr. Woodville, and we know you are Court Woodville. I have a photograph here that was taken in 1864. Will you deny this is you, sir?
No. I remember when it was taken. Let me warn you of something, gentlemen. Anne LeBeau is a dangerous woman. Much more so than you think. If she has learned that our son is still alive, she will be acting swiftly and with deadly dispatch to rectify that problem. She has always thought Ross to be weak, so it is my belief that once the news of the failure to kill her son reaches her, she will remove Ross first, then take whatever assets he has and leave Virginia. You will never be able to trace her through her holdings, for she uses many names through many dummy companies. She will simply change her name, alter her appearance somewhat, and head west to start all over, probably in California, and she will leave no one alive behind her to tell the story. Believe that, gentlemen. The woman is as ruthless as a black widow spider.
So you will verify and sign these papers attesting that the young man named Ben Franklin Washington is your son?
I verify nothing, and I will sign nothing. The young man's needs have been seen to, and he is comfortable as far as money is concerned. He will never have to worry about a thing. Now, as ruthless as Anne is, she will not harm Paige. I know that. We both have seen that Paige will never want for anything. Tell Ben to stop this pursuit after his birth mother. If he continues to dog her, she won't fail again. Tell the young man to accept what he is and drop the matter.
He may never stop, sir.
Then he's a damn fool. I suspect that Anne let Ross arrange Ben's, accident. That was her first mistake. She won't make that mistake again. The next time she'll handle it and Ben will be dead. And all he will have accomplished is to destroy his sister's future. If he continues to pursue that end and I live through this fight, I'll kill the son of a bitch myself.
Listen, Mr. Woodville.
No, you listen! Is Ben so selfish he wants to ruin other lives? What else might he want? To live in a grand mansion and be lord of the manor? He might do that, but he will never be anything other than what he is, and that is a goddamn quarter breed. I don't care how much money he has. We're not talking about oh-so-proper Boston. We're talking about the South, where passions run high against Negroes. They were slaves 4 short years ago. You think the stroke of a pen will change the feelings of 200+ years? Don't be naive, gentlemen. Tell Ben to accept what he is and drop the matter.
He is one very determined young man.
If that is the case, gentlemen, what he might well end up as is one very dead young man.
Is that your final word on the matter, sir?
That is it.
And you, Mr. McAllister?
Why destroy lives when nothing is to be gained by it? If Ben Franklin Washington persists in this, my grandson might well call him out and shoot him. McAllisters have a tendency to take the shortest route toward a goal. I sympathize with the young man, but in some respects, I have to agree with Cord. Drop the matter. I know Anne. I watched her grow up. That is one dangerous woman.
So what happens now, Mr. McAllister?
The truce is over. You boys had better get clear, because all hell is about to break loose.
Over the years, Ross had carefully laid out a network of spies around Richmond, and he knew he was being followed an hour after his sister's hired thugs began trailing him. And he knew by the end of that day who they were and who had hired them. It came as no surprise to him. Ross went about his business as if he knew nothing of the men shadowing him. He quietly began liquidating what he could and turning that into bank drafts. Just like Anne, Ross had secret accounts in New York City under different names. And just like Anne, he was wealthy in his own right. But where'd he go? Where would he be safe? The more he thought about it, the more attractive the West looked. Denver was a place that was gonna grow, and he might as well get in on the ground floor. With his wealth, he could build a very comfortable home there and live in seclusion and luxury while his wealth grew. Spread his money around in various banks and invest in the right properties. He would arrange for any monies due him from his holdings in Virginia, holdings he could not liquidate at this time, to be quietly converted into cash and sent to New York City to one of the banks there. Of course, there were other details to be worked out, but they were minor ones and could be handled by one of his local attorneys. But he couldn't arrange to have Ann's hired thugs disposed of. That would tip Ann off that he was onto her plan. And then it came to him. He would have a couple of very close friends of his with him at all times, reasonably prominent people. Of course, they might get killed, but what the hell? Anne sat in her drawing room. Like Ross, she needed somewhere to relocate to, and San Francisco seemed a logical choice. But her brother had to be taken care of. She had to see to that. She could leave no loose ends dangling, and she couldn't just disappear. She had to let people think she was dead. She had that worked out, too. It was a fine plan, albeit a chancy one. Everything hinged on getting everybody at Ravenswood at the same time. She thought she could arrange all that easily enough. She told all but one of the servants that beginning Monday, they could have a few weeks off, with pay, of course. She and her personal servant were going to take a little trip. Selma was just about her size. The woman would do nicely. Not that there would be much left to identify. She let it be known around the city that she was going to take a trip. She placed her better jewelry in a bank box. Paige could have that after her death. Then she arranged for painters to come in. While she was gone, the place was to be remodeled. She insisted that they bring their materials at once and store them at the mansion. Lots of nice, very flammable materials. And smiled. Everything was working out quite nicely. It was going to be perfect. Anne liked things neatly done. Layfield's plan to attack during the night had turned into a disastrous failure. Jamie and his people heard him coming about 10 seconds after they started climbing over the rock-covered pass, and they were waiting for him. The leading team of Layfield's Revengers was cut down by rifle fire and forced to withdraw, leaving their dead behind.
Stupid people. It's just not much of a fight, huh?
I think it's going to get better.
Well, I certainly hope so.
The defenders of the town took turns sleeping and guarding the rest of that night and were all refreshed when dawn split the sky. The approaching horses cut into Layfield's thoughts and turned the man around. The most disreputable-looking bunch of men he had ever seen were walking their horses up to Layfield, standing on the eastern side of the jumble of rocks that blocked the pass.
I be Clyde Ellis. We uns come to avenge our kin. Get out of the way. We're going across to settle this score with Jamie McAllister.
Why, of course, Mr. Ellis. Be my guest.
That pass there is a death trap.
Thank you.
But up yonder ain't.
The West Virginia man pointed to the ridges above the town. Layfield suppressed a groan. The solution to the problem was so obvious that he had overlooked it. What had he been thinking? He felt like a fool.
We send riflemen up yonder to pick them bastards off one at a time. I got boys with me that can knock the eye out of a squirrel at 300 yards.
Don't even think about doing that.
Layfield and Ellis turned to face a dozen or so miners, all armed with rifles. One of them pointed to the other side. Ellis and Layfield turned. Another dozen or so miners, all armed with rifles, stood or squatted on the other side. Those miners pointed above them, and then across the narrow pass. Ellis and Layfield looked all around. Several hundred men stood from the top of the high pass to almost the bottom. All of them armed.
Ain't gonna be no back shooting, boys. Y'all got them men down yonder outnumbered 10 or 15 to 1 or more as it is. Now you fight them on the up and up. You send men up here to back shoot, they ain't gonna be returning. You stepped in one condition, and that's rolling downhill dead.
I reckon we understand that.
You better.
Now what?
We plan some.
At Fort Lyon, some 175 hard miles away, the commanding officer read a dispatch and swore.
Goddamn Layfield again. I thought we were done and through with that lunatic at war's end.
What's the matter?
Layfield is supposed to be heading to Bell City with a large force to launch an attack against Jamie McAllister. Hell, they're probably already there by now.
Why would Layfield attack Jamie McAllister?
Jamie and his marauders rode up into Pennsylvania in 65 and burned down his town, remember?
Oh, yeah. Bell City is a hard week's ride from here, sir.
Yeah, I know. Whatever's going to happen will have happened long before we reach there.
Begging your pardon, sir. Scout's back and he's been wounded. He's got an arrow in his side.
Engines again. Have the men fall out, Captain.
Luck be with you, Jamie McAllister.
Those in the old deserted town waited for several days, knowing something was in the works, but not knowing what. They cleaned guns, sharpened knives, ate, stood guard, and rested. Cord was across the street from the bar on the roof of a hotel, watching the blocked pass. Something, he wasn't sure what, caught his eyes. He raised his field glasses and studied the pass more carefully. Then he scrambled down to report to the others in the bar.
They're clearing the pass by hand, rock by rock.
I wondered when they'd get around to that. It's not going to do them any good. Hell, it'll take weeks to get a path cleared enough to get a horse through. All we have to do is pick them off one at a time as they come out.
It's a diversion.
A what?
A ruse. A variation on the Trojan horse ploy.
Whose horse? Trojan ploy? I never heard of him. What a stupid goddamn name.
Go back to sleep, you cretin.
What he just called me. Is that good or bad?
Bad.
That's what I figured. I gotta learn to read one of these days so I can figure out what this sawed-off piece of buzzard bait is calling me.
You know, West Virginia is mountainous.
What?
Yeah.
So many of those men with Layfield would not be at all reluctant to risk their lives making their way over the peaks that surround us.
Darkhand and me take care of this. We stop.
The Nez Perce and the Cheyenne walked out of the room.
I thought the miners told them that... No, they wouldn't interfere if all the men were doing was climbing up to circle around behind us.
That's right. But there won't be many of them doing the climbing. The mountain faces are too sheer. Nightstalker and Darkhand can hold them off. What we've got to do is figure out what those men on the other side of the pass are up to. Wait a minute.
Jamie ran to the door.
Nightstalker! Darkhand, come on back!
What the hell?
What's the problem? Come back inside! Don't stop the men from getting in behind us! What?
Make no sense.
Yes, it does. Listen to me. I believe Layfield and Ellis are counting on us to throw everybody toward the rear when those men attack. When we do that, Layfield will launch an attack from the east. He'll be pouring men over those rocks. If enough men get through, we'll be in a box, trapped.
Clever. Not terribly original, but clever enough for a man of Layfield's limited intelligence. Ah, yes. I see what you're planning. Let Darkhand and Nightstalker get into position unseen and allow those climbers to think they've taken us by surprise. Meanwhile, the remainder of us will have quietly gotten into position close to the east end of the blocked pass. We shall be armed with every gun we have at hand. Nightstalker and Darkhand will start yelling in panic. Yes. Put Lobo with them. He can roar like a grizzly. The rest of us will lie quietly in wait. Perhaps allow the first wave of Layfield's men to actually breach the rocks, and then open up on them.
That's it.
Very, very good, Colonel. I'm impressed.
I'll go with them too, Jamie. They'll be expecting to hear a woman screaming.
That's right. Good.
Let's get to it. I'll start making some bombs out of what powder we have left. I'll make them small enough so we can toss them.
Ha! Damn! Now things are getting interesting.
Each defender was armed with two Henry rifles and anywhere from 2 to 6 pistols. Sparks had rummaged around and found cans and bottles and had constructed a dozen or so grenades, filling the homemade bombs with rusty nails and small jagged rocks. The flying shrapnel would produce hideous wounds. During the night, Smoke had carefully inched forward to the blocked pass and planted 3 heavy charges of explosives, and that exhausted all the powder the men had brought with them. Smoke then laid out fuses and backed up to one of the buildings at the edge of the pass. There, he waited with a box of matches for the attack to begin. Audie was on the roof of a building on one side of the street, Preacher on the roof on the other side. Jamie, Cord, Sparks, and Smoke were on ground level, waiting. When Nightstalker, Darkhand, Hannah, and Lobo had finished with the men who had climbed down to attack from the west side of the pass, they were to join the others. Now all the defenders could do was wait. Meanwhile, Ben Franklin Washington, along with 2 attorneys, several reporter friends, and a group of detectives who would act as bodyguards, were leaving Boston on a train bound for Richmond. At Ravenswood, Ann was packed and ready to go. A trusted driver was waiting by the carriage in the back of the mansion. Anne's personal servant was thrilled. Her mistress was actually taking her to New York City. She'd been astonished when Anne had given her several of her own beautiful rings to wear on her fingers. Not just alone, of course. She was wearing them now at Anne's insistence. Everything was ready, with just one small hitch. Ross had disappeared without a trace. Anne allowed herself a small smile when her hired thugs reported that to her. So her darling brother had smelled a rat. Well, she might have guessed he would. Ross was anything but stupid. She watched as the thugs drank their tea and quietly sank into unconsciousness. Death would soon overtake them. Selma, she was already dead in the kitchen from the poisonous brew. Anne dragged her body to the large living room and carefully placed it across the room from the two soon-to-be-dead men, now sprawled on the floor. She put a small pistol next to the maid's hand. Two cylinders had been fired the day before. Pistols were also placed close to the men's bodies. Then Anne closed up the house and lit the long, slow-burning fuses that would ignite the flammable materials left by the painters. And she got into her carriage. Hillis had sent quite a few more men scaling the cliffs than Jamie had anticipated. But in the end, it made no difference. The four defenders at the west end of town were ready for him. Nightstalker, Darkhand, Lobo, and Hannah started yelling, and Layfield sent his troops scrambling over the rocks at the east end. Smoke lit the fuses, then backed off to join Jamie. Pieces of men flew in all directions. Sparks started hurling his homemade grenades, and the rusty nails and bits of glass and rock tore into flesh and dropped men dead or horribly wounded. When the defenders started firing, it was almost at point-blank range. They didn't have to bother to take aim, for the street was a narrow one, and the attackers were running shoulder to shoulder. It was a very brief fight, lasting only 3 or 4 minutes at the most, but it was carnage at both ends of the street for Layfield's and Ellis's men. When the gun smoke and black powder smoke from the bombs and grenades and the dust from the explosions finally settled, both ends of the short street were littered with dead and dying.
Layfield! Can you hear me?
I hear you, McAllister, you treacherous, traitorous bastard. What do you want?
You can send over a small group to collect your wounded here on the east side. We'll patch up those left alive on the other end of the street.
Why should I believe the likes of you, McAllister?
Don't be a fool, Layfield. Your wounded are suffering while you're standing over there debating. Come get them. We won't fire on you.
Your kind heart is going to get you killed one of these days. Especially when dealing with the likes of men like Layfield.
You may be right, Smoke.
Two teams of men, unarmed, came gingerly and cautiously over the mound of rocks in the pass. They stopped just before they reached street level.
Come on across. We ain't gonna fire on you.
Layfield's men gathered up the wounded and left without saying a word of thanks.
Nice people. We should have shot every one of the damned miserable wretches.
Hey, let's eat! All this excitement done made me hungry.
That night, Layfield got down on his knees and began fervently praying for heavenly guidance.
Give me a sign, O Lord. Please, show me the way. Shit.
What he got was rain. Cold, miserable rain. It was still pouring when Layfield awakened the next morning, coming down in cold, gray sheets.
I didn't think we could pull this off, but damned if I don't believe we done it.
The miners say that some of Layfield's men have left him, but he still has a sizable force with him.
Men will come, not on horseback, but walking. They have found an old trail through the mountains. They will be here in the morning.
You sure of that?
I am sure.
They use the rain for cover. It's misty and foggy out there. That's why the miners didn't warn us.
You can bet they left people behind, moving around, tending fires and the like.
You get out of here, Smoke. You get gone.
I'll stay.
He's right, boy. You got a whole life ahead of you. Hell, we're old. Clear on out.
Forget it.
Your courage and loyalty to a friend is most admirable. But those attributes can sometimes be misplaced. Preacher is right. you should leave. No one will think the less of you for it.
I relieve Cord and stand watch while he gets some coffee and warmth. I'm staying.
Smoke picked up his rifle and left the room.
That boy is as hard-headed as you are, Prazier.
We ain't lost his fight yet. None of you ain't ever seen that boy up close and in a fight. He's a devil. There ain't a nerve in him.
He does appear to be right handy with them guns of his.
Oh, rattlesnake fast. Learned everything you know from me, of course.
Preacher exited the room swiftly as people began throwing sticks and cups and boots at him. The rain stopped during the night, and the sky became star-filled. By dawn, Layfield's men were in place, and there was nothing for the defenders of Bell City to do but stand and fight. For Layfield's men now were located at each end of the ghost town, and escape for the defenders was impossible.
This reminds me of the time I was surrounded by about 500 cowards. That was back in the late 40s, I reckon it was. They'd ambushed an army supply train, but they didn't know there was about 1,000 or so rifles scattered amongst the wagons. There was cases and barrels of shot and powder. Well, I couldn't run nowhere. My good horse had pulled up lame, so I started loading up their rifles just as fast as I could. I must have loaded up near about 200-300 of them rifles before them painted-up Injuns realized I was there. See, they'd been torturing them what was left alive, but when they'd see me, here they come, whooping and hollering and shrieking like devils, and I commenced to fire it just as fast as I could pick up one rifle, let a bang and lay it down, pick up another one. Ha-ha! Them cowards never seen nothing like that! They charge and I'd bang. I was firing them rifles like pistols, one in each hand. Oh, the smoke was so thick you couldn't even see. They was dead cowards laying all over the place. Oh, it was a sight, I tell you. We fought nearby all morning before them Indians finally give up with riding off carrying their dead. That was a hell of a fight, let me tell you that, boys. And you too, Miss Hannah.
Why, you misbegotten old reprobate. What has that to do with our present situation?
Well, I don't rightly know. Just reminded me of it, that's all.
There was about 100 of them, Kiowa.
You mean the story is true?
Yeah, most of it. Preacher must have killed or wounded 40 or 50 Kiowa before they give it up and rode off.
Well, of course it's true.
Preacher walked off to take his assigned position. Audie thought about the stacks and stacks of rifles and belts of ammunition that had been retrieved from the dead and wounded of Layfield and Ellis's men after their abortive charges.
There was a moral to the story after all, but getting it out of that old buzzard is sometimes as difficult as shaking hands with a grizzly.
The defenders began loading up Henry rifles and Colt pistols and passing them around.
This will give us a little better chance.
They're here! But the first ones did not make it very far. Smoke got them.
Welp, it's been nice knowing you folks. I reckon our strength's done run out. But I aim to take a bunch of them bastards with me.
Here they come! And we didn't kill nearabouts as many as we first thought, neither. They're swarming like bees.
Jamie stepped out onto the warped boardwalk, his hands filled with Colts. He emptied the pistols into knots of men rushing into the streets from all sides and watched them fall. He holstered the empties and filled his hands with Colt pulled from behind his belt. The morning was bright, sunny, and rapidly turning bloody in the Colorado Rockies.
You come and get me, you bastards!
Annie used her now empty rifle as a club, smashing heads until she went down under a mob of blue-shirted men. Jamie knew she was gone. It filled him with a rage he had not experienced in years. He turned toward where he had last heard her shouting empty Colts that filled his fists into the mob of men. Then he picked up two Henry rifles and began firing them, twirling the rifles like batons to work the levers. A bullet nicked one arm, another bullet slammed into a post and sent slivers of wood into his face, and yet another round burned his right leg. Jamie stood like a rock, loaded rifles leaning against the storefront within arm's reach. He would empty two more and grab up two more. Then Jamie grabbed up two fully charged pistols and two rifles and ducked back inside the bar. He ran the length of it and exited out the back door. Jamie turned and came face to face with a handful of blue-shirted revengers. It was too close for rifle work, so he started swinging one rifle like a club. Skull bones popped and jaws broke under the impact. Dropping the now stock-broken rifle, grabbed up a Henry from one of the downed men and ran up the alleyway just in time to stab. Watching through horror-filled eyes as Cord stepped out into the street, both hands filled with pistols. Cord had changed clothes. He was now wearing his old Confederate uniform, from his cavalryman's boot to his gray gold-braided hat.
Come on, you Yankee bastards! Meet the gray one more time!
Cord began firing as fast as he could cock and fire. Jamie watched his body soak up lead, but the man stayed on his boots, exacting a fearful toll from the blue-shirted men only a few dozen yards away. He emptied his pistols and sank to his knees in the muddy street, the front of his gray coat soaked with blood. Dropping the empties, Cord pulled out two more pistols from his sash and kept on firing. Cord Woodson died on his knees in the street, but he wouldn't fall over. He remained on his knees, facing the enemy. Jamie stepped out of the alleyway. He filled Cord's killers with lead and watched them fall. Jamie dropped those empty pistols and the empty Henry and jerked out his last two Colts. Night Stalker leaped down from the rooftop into a knot of now badly disoriented and frightened men, a knife in one hand and a tomahawk in the other.
Eat us up, dog!
He began cutting flesh and splitting heads. His body jerked time after time as bullets tore into him. But the Nez Perce warrior would not go down that easily. When he finally fell, he was surrounded by a sea of blue, dead, dying. Dark Hand, one leg broken by a bullet and blood streaming down his face from another wound, painfully hauled himself to an upright position, tied himself to a hitch rail, and kept firing. A pile of blue-shirted bodies lay in a semicircle all around him. Jamie saw a man cautiously making his way up the street, staying close to the buildings, ducking in and out of doorways, and he turned to face the man.
Step out to the street, you yellow-bellied bastard!
Alistair!
That's right! Who are you?
I be Clyde Ellis, and I've come to kill you, Alistair!
You can try!
I'll just do that.
I doubt it.
Jamie shot Clyde Ellis twice, one slug taking the man in the chest and the second slug tearing open his throat. Carl Miller could see that the battle was nearly over and they had lost. It was incredible. Nine men and one woman had defeated a superior force. It was time for him to haul his butt out of this death trap.
You going somewhere, mister?
Carl faced smoke. He grinned. The fool had his pistols in leather.
You damned stupid little pup.
Carl lifted his rifle. The last thing he saw was the blur of smoke's draw. Smoke Jensen turned and saw that the battle was over. The main street of Bell City was littered with the dead, the dying, and the wounded. He looked around for his mentor, Preacher, and a smile creased his lips as his eyes found the old mountain man walking up the boardwalk toward him.
My God, that was a pretty good fight, boys. We skunked them good, we did. We just...
Damn.
Preacher's eyes had found the dead hitch rail tied body of Dark Hand and the bloody body of Night Stalker. Audie stood over the battered and bloody and almost unrecognizable body of Hannah and slowly shook his head.
I shall never meet a braver woman.
Audie had suffered two wounds, one in the side and the other one in his left arm. Lobo lumbered into the street and picked up his little friend just before Audie hit the ground. He carried him off to tend his wounds. Sparks had a bullet crease on his noggin and a burn on his leg. Preacher, Smoke, and Lobo were unscathed. Jamie stepped out into the street and looked around him. He had four minor wounds, including a slight head wound that dripped blood down onto his face and shirt.
They're hightailing out, McAllister. Heading north, they is. About 30 of them all told.
Jamie waved to the miner in acknowledgement.
Let's bury our dead.
Preacher pointed to the body of Cord, dead on his knees in the muddy street.
That there was a brave man. He needs some fitting words on his marker. You got any?
Yeah. His last hand was a good one.
Preacher and Smoke rode out first, followed the next day by Lobo, Audie, and Sparks. The day after that, Jamie pointed his horse's nose toward home. On a hill overlooking the deserted town, Jamie paused to look down at Bell City for a moment, then lifted his eyes to the graves of his friends. Cord, buried on the south side of the town, Night Stalker, Dark Hand, and Hannah laid to rest on the north side of the pass. Jamie raised a hand in farewell and then lifted the reins.
Let's go home, Lightning. I think we both earned a good long rest after this nonsense.
Yeah!
Thirty miles away to the north, Aaron Layfield and what remained of his army were camped, seeing to their wounds and wallowing in hatred for Jamie. And there was plenty of hate to go around. Aaron had sent a messenger back east to notify the kin of Clyde Ellis of the tragic events that had befallen their relatives. Those who had escaped with the slightly insane colonel of the Army of Revengers and part-time lay preacher were the most dedicated and hard-bitten of his men, all veterans of the war between the states. Aaron had asked those men if they would stay with him to plan a way to rid the world of Jamie Ian McAllister. They all agreed to stay.